Oh, Mr. Darling, are you aware that a policeman showed up on the library's doorstep early this morning looking for you? And I had to answer for you since you could not be found?
Madam, I can...
Am I to understand that you punched a man at the Broom and Fang?
But madam, he made disparaging remarks about the library and you.
Darling, I'm sure I've been called worse by better people. Now, what did he say?
He said the library is full of ghouls and you're the main creep.
Well, that's not too far off the mark. Please see our guests in. Welcome to the Midnight Library, everyone. Won't you please follow Mr. Darling's lead to the reading room and take a seat of your own choosing? If you could keep off the beast skin rug... did I say beast? I meant to say bear. If you could please keep off the bear skin rug, I'd like the wolf pups to dry their fur by the first fireplace for a while. I know that we all love the aroma of wet wolf fur, but they do tend to get our bedclothes wet, and that's not quite as charming as you might imagine. I'm sorry, what's that? Do the wolf pups sleep with us? Yes, of course they sleep in our beds. We're not animals. Well, not all the time. Where do your wolf pups sleep? Good. I am your humble host, Miranda Merrick. Mr. Shakeshaft, please allow Romulus to lick your leg as he dries by the fire, won't you? Yes, I know you have an injury. You do realize that leg is probably going to have to come off anyway, right? And what a fine coincidence. Tonight's topic of delight is that of freed limbs. Well, amputated limbs. Those that had become a danger through disease or mangling. I mean accidents. Or believe it or not, by choice. And what some people have chosen to do with them after their departure. Speaking of detached limbs, I suppose it would be all right to share with you a related story about some relatives of mine, dear Uncle Claude on my sainted mother's side, and his irascible wife, Aunt Athelda. Claude was a broommaker, you see, an extremely talented broommaker, if you catch my meaning. Well, he had lovingly fashioned a broom out of ash wood for his troublesome wife, Ethelda. He only asked that she wait for the broom to age and cure a while. But, being anything but patient, she attempted to fly upon it while it was still a tad green. She lifted off from the roof of their barn, which was overly confident in the first place. She was haphazardly carried across a neighboring field. She wobbled and squirmed and cursed poor Claude as the new broom struggled to accommodate her. Well, just over Frankenstein's farm, yes, I am aware of the silly coincidence of the name, just over Frankenstein's farm, the ash snapped and dumped Aunt Athelda from about a dozen feet up and on to the back of Mad Muldoon, Frankenstein's mule, who bucked and galloped and charged into town with Athelda writhing and screeching deliriously all the way. But he abruptly halted at the new town fountain in the town square and pitched her in. She splash-landed upside down in the fountain with her skirts flung over her head, exposing her her bottom to everyone attending the dedication of the new fountain. She gathered, well, none of her surviving dignity and furiously walked, soaking wet, back home to Uncle Claude. mumbling curses in a mix of Romanian and Latin the entire way. She vehemently cursed the broom, Uncle Claude, and Muldoon the mule. The problem was, Aunt Athalda didn't really know Latin or speak Romanian, at least not fluently enough to be dishing out curses in the languages. She apparently wanted the broom to burn for all of eternity, but green wood doesn't burn, so it just smoldered with the smell of wet mule for all of eternity. Every time she destroyed the broom, it just reappeared the next day. If she threw it outside, it simply popped back into existence beside her hearth, steaming with a stink that filled their entire cottage. Her raging curses were intended to cause Uncle Claude's left arm to drop off. She was going to allow him to keep his right arm so he wasn't totally useless to her. She also wanted the mule's left hoof to drop off and didn't care what happened to him after it did so. However, in her curse, she mentioned herself in a manner of exacting her targets. Something like, "I, Athalda, do solemnly direct the left arm of my wedded to gravely affect, and that heinous mule with his he and his haw, take thou too his foolish left paw." Probably something like that. But in a ramble of broken Romanian and incoherent Latin, well, Uncle Claude was fine, and the mule was fine, but the next day, Aunt Athalda awoke with a mule's left foreleg, complete with a huge hoof and iron shoe. She instinctively grabbed the meat cleaver, mumbled another curse, and chopped off the ridiculous appendage. It came right back. From there on out, her left forearm and hand were that of a mule's leg and hoof. And you may not believe this next bit, but dear old Uncle Claude, long-suffering Uncle Claude, had her wedding ring remade and enlarged to fit her equine hoof. He did love her. And unbelievably, the heart wants what the heart wants. Now, what do we all want? Why, a nice dreamy story about bizarre amputations, of course. There are simply stories upon stories telling of so many people from history through various happenings, some horrific and some through simple mishaps, of those who have suffered the extrication of an extremity. Generally, the removal of an arm, hand, foot, or leg. This unfortunate event, if attended to properly in an expeditious manner, is thankfully rarely fatal. And although it was almost certainly a grievous setback to a person in the earliest of times, it didn't take long for the human spirit to become industrious in ways to resiliently overcome such disabilities. In modern times, these losses are only marginally considered as disabilities at all, thanks to the advancements continually being made in prosthetics. In tonight's reading, we'll touch on the harsh history of amputations and how they used to be handled, and then learn about how some who had parted with certain body parts did things that can only be described as exceedingly unique, as we shall see. But first, let's brush up on the art of amputation just a bit. Amputation is one of the oldest known surgical procedures, and as most of you know, is the removal or severing of an exterior bodily part, an extremity. You wouldn't refer to the removal of an eye as an amputation because it is an interior body part, and they must be excised or extracted. We know that people thousands of years ago learned through trial and extreme error what to do and not do when an extremity became damaged through injurious mishap. Say the 2-ton stone you were assisting in heaving to help build the pyramids slipped and crushed your willing hand beneath the stone you were helping to place it upon. You'd quickly notice, after only a few hours, that your mangled hand didn't look as though it was going to begin to heal, no matter how much oxen fat and cat feces the local holy man slathered onto it. In fact, 2 fingers have fallen off entirely, and the other 2.5 are going cold and dark in color. If you want to live, in order to avoid a toxic infection, it's time to quickly wave goodbye to your own hand. And one can only imagine that the technique of doing so was going to be as bad or worse than the initial accident. With no backup plan or truly healing medications to help you if things took an ugly turn. One of the first written descriptions of the procedure we have is from a man named Celsus from the 1st century A.D. Celsus himself was not a surgeon, but a Roman encyclopedist who wrote extensively on multiple topics, but only a portion of his writings remain. Regarding amputation, he states that amputations were being done and that surgeons typically chose to sever the affected limb just below the area that had become tainted by gangrene. Gangrene is the dangerous condition caused by lack of blood flow or bacterial infection, resulting in the death of living tissues. In modern times, we would either hopefully prevent the infection from setting in the first place, or treat it intensively as early as possible, with amputation being a last resort in more serious cases. Untreated, rampant gangrenous infections can lead to septic shock and death within 48 hours. If faced with an old-fashioned amputation, let's say in Roman times, well, there weren't any true and reliable analgesics or controllable narcotics for the patient to trust in to help them to tolerate the procedure. So timing was the critical factor. With the useless limb being cut off in less than 10 minutes, it's thought that the patient was given something to bite down upon, perhaps some rags or straps of leather. Then the surgeon would cut through the skin, the muscle, and bone all at the same time. This was known as the classic circular cut, which sounds comforting, but often involved the stretching of the skin over the, stump end that remained and was not ideal. Thankfully, many improvements to the early method came along, but not until mainly the 1700s, when patients were treated to better clinical environments, powerful but dangerous pain medications, and even more consideration as to how much of the limb could be safely left for the fitting of a basic prosthetic. And a wonderful new way of strategically cutting a generous extra patch of skin tissue to caringly cover the residual muscle and bone was employed. It was much more conducive to healing and visually more pleasing, to some extent. This procedure is known as a flap amputation and is still in use today. I suppose it may be a comforting thing for you to know that during the American Civil War, the speed at which limbs were amputated was known to have decreased by about half that of earlier times, increasing the odds of the patient surviving the operation greatly. Patients, sadly, often die during the dramatic operations due to shock, excruciating pain, and even cardiac arrest. So getting the procedure process down to around 5 minutes was a tremendous benefit. However, even before the Civil War, there was a British surgeon who was referred to as the fastest knife in the West End. At a time when roughly 1 in 4 of all of the other surgeons' patients died during their amputations, Dr. Robert Liston was only losing about 1 in 10. He was known for conducting his amputations like a magician commands the attention of the staring eyes of his audience. His patient would be strapped down securely to an operating gurney before a crowd in a packed operating theater, with rows and rows of spectators, some in the medical profession, some not. And Dr. Liston would stand calmly with his bone saw held aloft and say,
"Time me, gentlemen."
He would then slice through the skin and sinews and down through the bones and out the backside of a man's leg below the knee in 2.5 minutes. So successful was he at his skill that he became renowned for it all across Britain, causing those in need of the dreaded surgery to risk their lives by refusing to be operated on by other doctors and camping out in or near his office, waiting instead to undergo the dangerous operation by Dr. Liston. Now, let me say here that there is also a wealth of information regarding the fascinating history and development of prosthetics that one cannot help but encounter when happily researching the topic of amputation. I was going to say that the two subjects go hand in hand, But anyway, I've decided that we would stick with the leftovers, so to speak. But first, our reading tonight is brought to you by Grimm's Grocers. Grimm's has all your favorite food, fine chocolates, meats, and bread. Push your cart in a happy mood with soft music over your head. But if you're seeking something bleak, they invite you to the back. There you'll find just what you seek, and almost everything is black. Park your cart over the pentagram, so innocent on the floor. Wait till you see a beckoning hand inviting you through the door. Shop in the back to your heart's delight, finding all your ghoulish supplies. You may even see Darling if the time is right. He loves their werewolf surprise. There's hemlock for your enemies, black candles for your shrine. There's laxatives for your frenemies, and sacrificial wine. Grimm's even offers signs to display upon your own front door. If buzz off, get lost, or go away, is what you're looking for. Grimm's Grocers aims to please. A new product this week, Wanda's Homemade Flying Ointment. Made with 6 secret ingredients and pure badger grace, Wanda's Flying Ointment will make your flight fast and magically comfortable. It also treats broom rash. I've heard. Grimm's Grocers at the corner of Vincent and Price. Now, as I was saying earlier, a severed limb or extremity is referred to differently from that of an excised bodily component that's sliced out from inside of the body. So, unfortunately, I can't go into the wonderful stories of what has been done with those mostly squishy inner parts. For instance, how the author of Frankenstein, Mary Shelley, kept her also author husband Percy Shelley's actual heart in a silver heart-shaped box long after his death. because when he died by drowning and he was cremated, his heart was apparently the only bit of him that refused to burn, and it was plucked from the fire by a dear friend, who then gave it to Percy's wife Mary. Isn't it sad that I don't have time to tell you about that? So, if or when you have a limb of your very own cut off, or if by some manner it is involuntarily detached, well, you might think that what happens to that limb would be entirely up to you, the owner of it. However, in reality, there are laws and biohazard guidelines and many other factors that vary depending upon which country, province, or state you live in, as well as the condition of the amputated part. Religious practices and beliefs are often considered, and if you are permitted to keep your severed limb, what you intend to do with it may need to be stated to the governing or medical authorities. One can only imagine that much of this management is implemented to stop you hopping on the subway with your newly lopped-off leg slung over your shoulder. But regarding the keeping of severed limbs, there are also exceptions and permissions granted in many cases, because after all, your body parts do belong to you, so your will regarding them is often the primary consideration. Long ago, there were zero laws or regulations of any kind directing what a person did with their own disconnected arms and legs. And honestly, I don't know if people were tougher in their nature a few hundred years ago, or just more stoic about such things. But in 1815, during the hellish battle at Waterloo, a war fought with soldiers on foot, face to face with rifles fitted with bayonets, as well as on horseback, and with cannons. The Duke of Wellington was positioned near Lord Uxbridge in the fighting, when the Lord's leg was splintered by a cannonball, and he was heard to exclaim,
"By God, sir, I've lost my leg!"
And Wellington sensibly replied,
"By God, sir, so you have!"
The leg, which by some accounts was described as shattered and the bone bit through with holes, was amputated at a nearby estate, the owner of which unbelievably asked if he could keep the leg, and Uxbridge unbelievably agreed, saying he had no further use for it. The leg was given a proper burial on the property, complete with an elegant monument-type stone, with a flowery dedication to Uxbridge, which drew many tourists for many years. Lord Uxbridge was said then to be the impetus of the apropos phrase, "one foot in the grave." Unfortunately, those who buried the leg didn't bury it deep enough or encase it in any protective box or casket, because after severe storms pummeled the estate, the leg was found protruding from the muddy ground. In 1878, when Uxbridge's son discovered that his father's bare bones were on display to the public, the family who owned the estate was ordered to bury them, but they only hid them away. Then, in 1934, a widow who didn't have any interest in the Lord's leg bones whatsoever tossed them into her furnace and burned them. So, I guess the moral here is, if you don't decide what happens to your parted from parts, anything could happen to them. So, what does happen to them? I'm glad to hear you ask. Most medical facilities incinerate amputated limbs, along with anything else they happen to pull out or off of you that's of no use for transplant or pathological research. although there are colleges and forensic facilities that will happily accept your donated body part for students to dissect or study. Those forensic people do all kinds of disturbing things with donated bodies and body parts, we've read. For centuries, many people have warmed to the idea of joining up with their dearly departed pieces at a later, yet-to-be-determined date. So these plotting planners have a history of purchasing an entire grave plot for themselves and then buried their arm or hand or foot or leg early in the grave. Some even holding weird graveside services for their newly dead body part. In the past, a small grave containing the severed limb was clearly marked so that when the owner of the limb died, it was dug up and reburied with them at their funeral. The driving belief behind this was often down to religious concerns that you could show up in the afterlife still without your body part if it wasn't officially buried inside your grave with you. Bloody red tape, eh? The practice of burying limbs is still popular today and is often approached with a mood of light humor by the amputees, some making use of the one foot in the grave saying on a temporary gravestone or even tattooing the saying on the calf of their remaining leg. So-called limb graves became fairly common and popular during the American Civil War, with so many hand-to-hand combat injuries requiring amputation. Incredibly, there were over 60,000 amputations conducted during this war. And a soldier was given the choice of taking their arm or leg home with them, or it would be buried for them. In fact, due to the high number of amputated limbs during the war, mass graves of amputated limbs were dug, filled, and covered over. And of course, there are strange legends that are attached to many of the detached bodily parts, and I could not bring myself to cheat you out of just a few of these. In 1898, 13-year-old Bert Barrett's arm was blown off by a shotgun blast, and it was buried by his family in one location, but he lived another 60 years and was buried 11 miles away from it in another. Each Halloween, it is said, the ghost arm can be seen creeping along in search of its body. Some people experience what is called phantom limb syndrome after their body part is removed, having the extremely real and convincing sensation of their missing extremity, tingling, itching, being hot or cold, tickling or burning, and in Benjamin Waldron's case, feeling the excruciating pain of his leg continually being twisted in the dreadful fashion in which he lost the leg in the first place. His leg became trapped in the powerful rolling tines of a workhorse-powered thrasher, and was so mutilated it had to be cut off, and was then buried beneath a gravestone that featured an outline of a leg with his initials and the date the leg was taken off. When Waldron was overcome with the persistent pain of feeling that his leg was still being wrenched and gnarled by the heavy farm machinery, he had his leg exhumed, and it was reported that the leg was all bent and twisted in its grave. When it was reburied, it was put right into a natural resting position, and Mr. Waldron was then relieved of his pain. The strange and debilitating phenomenon of phantom limb syndrome, which has plagued mankind since the dawn of amputation, perhaps thousands of years ago, had a huge leap forward in treatment in the 1990s by the brilliant neuroscientist V.S. Ramachandran. And by way of the simplest, painless, non-invasive method, too, a mirror. Well, a mirrored box, to be precise. When an amputee was suffering from real pain and weird sensations, cramps, and even locked or clenched positions in their non-existing limb, some reported they truly sensed that their amputated hand was painfully frozen in a quivering, tight fist that they could not unclench. Dr. Ramachandran would have the patient sit at a table and place their healthy functioning arm and hand inside an open mirrored box that showed the patient the reflection of their opposing missing arm and hand. Through a series of guided therapeutic exercises, the afflicted person's mind and perception of their imagined condition disappeared completely. Ah, if only the answers to our problems and wants were this simple. Which reminds me. Tonight's reading at the Midnight Library is brought to you by the League of Lady Gravediggers. Let's say you've lost a little limb, and it was bitten off by a bear. To bury it is your first whim, but you're uncertain where. Call the League of Lady Gravediggers. They know just what to do. No other club or group is quicker, and they have options for you. The girls accept whole bodies or parts. They're not picky and understand. They'll arrive with a special cart and take that leg off your hands. Now, would you like it buried forevermore, or do you hesitate to leave it? Just tell the ladies heretofore, and the ladies will retrieve it. You can even ask for other parts that don't even belong to you. Digging is their special art, not caring who is who. Get your hand or your granny's back. They don't care what you do with it. They just dig, they don't keep track. You can even stir your stew with it. Call the League of Lady Gravediggers at 976-DITCH-WITCHES. Join the League of Lady Gravediggers on Saturdays as they practice their hobby of ladies' fast pitch softball with Mr. Darling as their coach. They meet before dawn in the abandoned parking lot of the old toy store on the corner of Anna and Belle. Before we get to the creative, more lighthearted part of our reading tonight, I'm afraid it's going to get a little bit more psychologically dark. I mean, the truth is the truth, so I have to include a few facts of a different aspect of amputation, the voluntary aspect. Please be comforted by knowing that I, too, was a bit taken aback when I first heard about this condition a few years ago. Apparently, there exists a rare but medical condition called apotemnophilia, which is when a person becomes obsessed with the idea of having a healthy limb voluntarily amputated. The word apotemnophilia very roughly translates to mean love for amputation, which isn't exactly correct because it's not so much that they love the idea of undergoing the process of having their limb lopped off. It's more about the person's ideal vision of themselves. Those afflicted with this mindset are thought to suffer from a kind of body dysmorphism, meaning they envision themselves, to their way of thinking, more accurately and comfortably without a particular limb. To them, it's the absence or removal of the arm or leg that they firmly believe will make them feel whole and correctly match the idea they have of themselves in their mind. Some have even had a deep-seated belief that somehow their arm or leg was not actually theirs, and believed it to be foreign or an alien body part that needed to be removed. And because surgeons, who are sworn to act in regards to their patient's best interest only, will flat out refuse to amputate a perfectly healthy, useful limb, Well, there have been a few cases in which the determined person has been known to damage their undesired arm or leg, generally by freezing it in ice until it becomes frostbitten and has to be removed. Thankfully, the psychological and psychiatric aspects of this rare condition are somewhat better understood in modern times, and the few patients who emerge with the condition generally have at their disposal counseling, medications, and ongoing treatments to reset or get to the bottom of this off-kilter body ideal. The only similar thing we've even remotely encountered here in the library was a lady who loved to let the wolf pups playfully chew her thickly gloved hands. And that all stopped abruptly the evening she forgot to wear her gloves. She's fine. She's fine. She has lots of other fingers. The other fascinating facet of this multi-limbed story is that which we touched on earlier. When a person finds themselves in the position of having to relinquish an extremity for any given reason, well, some are inclined to feel disinclined to part with their departed part. Some people simply do not like the idea of their beloved appendage, be it a hand, foot, arm, or leg, being cut off, then likely refrigerated for a bit, then ultimately tossed into a fiery incinerator and burnt to ashes. They see no reason why their limb should not remain where it's literally been since it grew from within, with them. I have read, in my pleasurable reading time, that some medical professionals, when asked by their patients about keeping their severed limbs, have deceptively informed their inquiring patients, saying, by law, we're forbidden to let you have them, and we are required to destroy all removed tissues due to regulations regarding diseased or potentially pathogenic tissues, and many other fancy official-sounding ways of saying no, because they do not want to deal with the process and paperwork of releasing the sawn-off limb to its original owner. But some absolutely will. Now, there are some legal hoops that do have to be jumped through by both the hospital and the owner of the newly partitioned part, like filling out release forms by the hospital and the owner stating just how they intend to preserve the specimen and in what form. It should shock no one here to hear that body parts with the meat and skin still intact must be preserved as any wet specimen is kept for observation and study, completely sealed in a nice big jar, submerged in formaldehyde. The people who do keep their extremities rarely choose this option, one might guess, because, well, it's gross fun for sure, but not very practical when it comes to mobility, and most people want more variety when it comes to Halloween prop antics, I've heard. Now, my dear guests, let me take you through a modern example of a young woman who could not bring herself to relinquish her amputated foot. This story is true, and there are countless pictures for you to see from it, if you're so inclined. Her detached foot sure does get around. In 2011, Christy Loyal began to notice some numbness in her right pinky toe. She smartly had the numbness evaluated by a doctor, but the condition worsened and spread further into her foot and became painful. A short time later, she was diagnosed with a kind of cancer, and amputation just below the knee was decided upon to preserve her health. While discussing the procedure with her oncologist, Christy casually asked if she could keep her lower leg and foot, and he assumed that she was joking. She wasn't. Even her parents tried to convince her to let her loosed foot go, but she believed she would certainly regret it if she did. Her understanding doctor acquired the official forms, and Christy signed them. She also made sure to tell everyone involved in the surgery that she was getting her leg and foot returned to her after the amputation. This was to prevent anyone from following the typical handling of amputated parts, which leads to the disposal of them. So when her leg was cut off, it was immediately sent to a pathology lab and preserved in a bath of tissue-saving chemicals. 1 month later, her leg was turned over to her sealed in a plastic bag. Christy wasn't interested in keeping her leg as a wet specimen and arranged to send it to a company that would skeletonize it and take it down to the bare bones for her. The company is called Skulls Unlimited, and bones are definitely their business. They prepare what is referred to as dry specimens for hospitals, universities, museums, collectors, and people like you and you. They know how to get the meat off the bones. They cook them. No, they don't. Skulls Unlimited received Christy's preserved leg and foot, defleshed it as much as they could. Preserved specimens become a little tough. They dried it and then placed it in a tank with dermestid beetles. And these lovely little insects are super talented at one thing: flesh eating. They are sometimes filmed doing what they do best, and the film is sped up to show you just how efficiently they chomp away and consume all the muscles and ligaments, nerves, veins, and cartilage that are so vehemently affixed to their home bones. Once her leg was nothing but bones, the bones were whitened and articulated, meaning they were put back together in their correct anatomical positions with special wires, pins, and springs. The entire process took 4 months and cost $650, and Christy has her skeleton foot, complete with attached partial tibia and fibula, which she takes with her everywhere and photographs it in all sorts of amazing places and situations. It's been to famous landmarks and parks, to parties and hung on a Christmas tree. It's been posed in a graveyard, taken to the beach, and is even shown being slightly nibbled upon by a few pets. Christy seems to be having lots of relaxed fun with her bony foot because she says most people don't even think it's real until they see her prosthetic. That's probably when she finds out she's a little too much for some people. But not you, I'm guessing. So we'll provide just where you can see her photos at our information desk and in tonight's reading notes. And I hope we've not been too much for any of you, my dear guests. Most of you don't look any more pale than usual, so that's good, I suppose. Please allow Mr. Darling to see you out of the library. What's that? Oh, yes, you have to go. It's not safe for you to stay any longer. But we'll see you next time. Good night, dear guests. Good night.
The maids are bringing the tea, madam. Regarding our ridiculer, it's like what they say. I can call my little brother a tail sniffer, but I'm not going to let anyone else call him that. I know we're a crew of misfits, madam, but I can't tolerate others saying it.
So you punched him?
More of an open-handed strike, really. And he deserved it.
His medical bill is $800.
I won't pay it.
He had 5 facial lacerations.
Well, I should bill him for improving his looks.
He needed 32 stitches and a rabies shot.
I'll get my checkbook.
Good boy. The Midnight Library is proudly brought to you by everyone at Astonishing Legends. Our excellent sound design is by Chris and Jason at Sounds Like an Earful. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I would love to hear from you personally. Please join our Patreon at patreon.com/midnightlibrary. And our wonderful but warped merch is available from Redbubble on redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary.